The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're obviously upset.
Permission is granted.
Glad I met you. I'm glad I met you, James.
I was not considering the fact that I, in fact, am the third man, capital T, capital D, capital M. But I am.
I want to show you something.
Let's take off all our clothes.
And maybe that's true. And that's what I said.
That's the how we used to sing it. I'm sorry. This is the way we used to sing it. It's the way you should sing it from now on.
But look at this. What is this?
I hate to put a negative spin on this, because it's great to drink, and everyone loves to drink.
They say you should not drink alcohol when it's so hot.
And I've talked about this, too, in the past, when I talked about soccer moms.
That was so good.
No, I didn't talk about soccer moms.
Excuse me for saying it. It's not even my place to say it.
I'll talk about soccer moms who became roller derby moms. And don't...
It was the old stuff.
And don't you think I haven't stopped. I have given up on the roller derby thing. Let's just get Pi Kim on the phone.
Wait. Where are the phones?
They took the phones.
Huh? We're not using Skype. Tonight, today, this afternoon.
You're such a hero. You're so rich. How come you're coming down here and waste your time with such a bunch of bums?
But let's not get into that. Let's not talk about me. Even though it is all about me. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Nancy.
What did I learn as a kid on Western? You don't sell a guy one car.
But I believe that, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I'm not trying to be politically correct here either.
So I don't know, do I?
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Do what you got to do if you're a neo-postmodernist, and I know you are.
What is that?
Look, just go, Jay, the best thing to do is to just Google the gal.
Let's talk about something important.
I really am when it comes to this thing.
Let's talk about something important.
Just a whole nother angle just took place in my head.
Put that coffee down.
But let's forget about drugs and medicine. Let's talk about sex.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
That's going to be happening. I got some things to cover before we get there. Dirty Things Get Stiff by Frank Cotolo.
It may mean something to you. It may not. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Does that mean that if you dirty things stand, dirty things get stiff?
To do, you get a house with a 25-year roof, an indestructible Jap economy shitbox, you put the rest into the system at 3-5% to pay your taxes, and that's your base, get me? That's your fortress of fucking solitude. And that puts you for the rest of your life at a level of fuck you. Somebody wants you to do something, fuck you. Boss pisses you off, fuck you. Own your house, have a couple bucks in the bank, don't drink. That's all I have to say to anybody at any social level. Did your grandfather take risks?
Yes.
I guarantee he did it from a position of fuck you. A wise man's life is based around fuck you. The United States of America is based on fuck you. You're a king. You have an army. Greatest navy in the history of the world. Fuck you. Blow me. We'll fuck it up ourselves. Which we have done. Beautiful fuck you position lost forever. Thank you.
get the picture. You will get the picture. Clearly, by the time the next 2 hours passes, I am the Bard of Broadcasting, the Vegetable Man, the Third Man. Godfather of internet radio. That means any subject that comes up, I can whack it. I'll make you offers. You can refuse and should. My name is Frank Atolo, man's name adorns the title of the show. Brock LaRob will be here with us shortly to talk about stuff. The stuff. Stop. Stay in. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. The level's unbelievable. Everything changes from moment to moment. That's because more people use the studio than should. Not should, you know, it's, I don't know. Sometimes it's just the heat in the summer. Sometimes it's more than the heat. Or the heat is, you know, part of the... an element of the elements. The element. It's the elements. That's what it may be, ultimately. My name is Frank Catolo. Man's name is Don't Tell the Show. This is Catolo Chronicles, and I'm not going to do... I ain't going to bring this up, though, because I've been thinking about this. Why is it that when you watch shows now on the telly... I don't know if this... No, this doesn't happen on radio. Well, there's nothing on radio except crap anyway, right? And that includes national, forget about it. NPR. Well, some things are good, but you know. What is this thing where, you know, someone ends their show and then they have to tell you the next show is starting as if you don't know when it starts? So it's like, if you say goodnight on this show, talk show, whatever, or you say goodnight, that's it. Or good afternoon. Or goodbye for now. And then the next show comes on. If there's a theme. Hi, it's me, Reslin Minklin. I love just making up names, like out of the clear blue sky. And the clear blue air, or the frosty air, or whatever. Or sitting one day with Burl Ives, drinking espresso. And those days are over. All days are over. What is it? Why do they have to go? And real, let's say the next show is, you know, Rock Remnant, right? I'm Frank Catolo, and the Rock Remnant show starts now. What the hell is that? Starts now? When did they start this thing? It starts now. They don't say my show ends now. That's what they should say. My show ends now. Your show starts now. And then they all do it everywhere. I don't know how these things start. Who starts them? Nobody gets credit for these things, and they shouldn't. Who wants to have credit for that? I'm the guy who starts every show to go starts now. Oh, is that on your resume? Ben Cloverdale? Is that on your... They just made up the name. Starts now. I've been looking through this Urban Dictionary, and the Urban Dictionary is, and there's a word a day. They can send you a word a day, and they have, I don't know how many words they have in their data bank, but I am not sure all of these words are, you know, used enough to be put into a dictionary. And I don't know who's making them up or how many people have to say it before it becomes part of the lexicon. In a lexicon, like in Lexicon, New Jersey. Yeah, it's a fan. You hear it again, right, don't you? It gets cool, and then it comes toward the weekend, and it gets disgusting. What are you going to do, all right? So a report on what do we have? you know, I don't know. I'm here with the fan. The fan's on, and I'm with you, and I'm here to remind you. Remind you. So I'm still doing this Brooklyn stuff from last week. By the way, I heard from someone who used to be on this show, L.J. Michalik. Well, people see his last name and they go, what is it, Michalici? What's your name? And who used to, of course, be the percussionist on the of Henry Morgan and the Highgrass Boys and other various musical organizations through the years. But last week when I did the Brooklyn Coney Island show, I said I kept playing that Brooklyn song by Wiz or Wix or Wiv or the frick their names. By the way, what you heard, that bit of vile language and that little scene you heard, was from the remake of a great movie. This movie's not that great, but it's a remake of a movie called The Gambler. It's still The Gambler. It's called The Gambler. If you get a chance to see the original one with James Caan, that's my recommendation. I have not seen all of this to know the new one with Mark Wahlberg. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Right now, I don't. Maybe later. Oh, Mark Wahlberg? Is it Wahlberg? Wahlberg or Wahlberg? That's what that was all about. And then I left the particular thing I was talking about to go over there and tell you about that. It was on the collage. I don't do a lot of long collages anymore. But Brock LaRob will be on here shortly, and we're going to be talking about, he said he wanted to talk about something. I said, fine, Edmund O'Chonlow, let's talk about that. After school specials. In a world where this stuff happens today and what's going on. I'm not doing the old man complaining bit. I'm just telling you. Cause you know me. I walk down the hallelujah trail. Every change, everything I have to absorb and learn and understand to my ability, I do that. And that's what I say all of you people should be doing. For your own good, to stay in step with the changes that are, they're meteoric. So anyway, Mr. Michalich, which is a shit trick. Anyway, last week I said this Brooklyn song, which was a hit, was I didn't know any other songs that had Brooklyn in the title, and I did. But I didn't think of them, and then he sent me a list. I'm not going to read you the list. You could look it up. You could Google Brooklyn songs or whatever. But there were a bunch of them, including more recognizable ones like Brooklyn Roads, Neil Diamond. That's the one I should have remembered, because Neil Diamond, who's from Brooklyn and is now, what, 99? But I don't know what it is. You know, I hope one day I could be 99. I'm not saying that as a disparaging comment for Neil Diamond, but his Brooklyn Roads, and Brooklyn Roads, called Brooklyn Roads. There's a couple of other ones that I don't know, because I don't know a lot of these. I didn't know a lot of the groups. I don't know the catalog of Boys to Men, for instance. One of them was a Boys to Men song or whatever. So there are other songs that have the word Brooklyn in the title. I know there used to be at least two porn stars who called themselves Brooklyn this and Brooklyn that. Brooklyn Lee, for once, who's retired. And another Brooklyn, I don't know the other one. I forgot the other one's name already because I was a fan of Brooklyn Lee. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm fearless. I am the godfather of internet radio. Do not forget that in any way I speak to you. But anyway, we're going to talk about, I'm sure I'm going to learn stuff because I was not we'll talk about that after school TV, which is something, piece of pop culture that is gone. Because there's no, who knows when anybody goes to school anymore, right? And who knows, who watches television in the afternoon, right? And that was before cable and everything. Okay. I want to tell you all that, and this is a warning. I'm giving you a warning, okay? For those of you too cheap, or just uninterested, or disinterested, or disuninterested, or undisinterested. In my books available at Amazon, I just want to give you this warning, and I can't give you details of the warning, and that is this. Before you know it, my books on Amazon, Blurb, and Lulu may no longer be available at the prices which they now are offered. These are very cheap prices for wonderful works. There are works way worse than this that cost $26.95 on Amazon. Really? I mean, you'll find them. I'm not saying you'll agree with me on which ones are bad or what have you, or which ones you don't like, or which ones aren't worth it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you will find ones that aren't as delicious as the ones I have on Amazon. Or, and this is, you know, the digital versions, okay? So they're all very cheap in return, in comparison with what books cost. The good way to, the good way, it's not a good way, it's not a good way, the blurb.com, lulu.com, and amazon.com, me, Frank Catolo, I have books there. If you want to download the PDF, I guess you can buy them, or you can buy them hardcover, whatever. But if you buy the digital versions, as I mentioned, I think that, here, I'm going to get the high end of it again. So if you go get all of them, let's say, that's 12, and the other one's what, 3, 6, 9, let's say 10, that's 22, what else, 22, and that's, but for about $25, you can get everything digitally. And I'm warning you, if you're putting it off, think twice, because before the end of Y2K plus 17, these books may be a lot more expensive and available in different ways. So I'm just warning you. I want you to have the complete set of everything, which you could get now if you go to those websites and buy those things for about $25 digital. It's a big bargain, my friends. And you are my friends. So there it is. I'm crossing this out. I wanted to tell you that. I may warn you again some other time. What else? Fun stuff. Contemporary fun stuff at the Montreal Jewish News. Now, I know I'm not doing political pulp every week as I used to do. So those people who became addicted to it, I'm sorry. You're just going to have to bear with this. You can get that for nothing. And there is a new one now, and very fresh and contemporary. This one is hot off the news of today. It's funny. I don't know. Maybe it's meaningful to you. Maybe you're too serious. No, anybody listening to this is not too serious to get upset. You know, because some people get upset. They find things to get upset about that they have no control over. That way they don't have to get upset about the things they're screwing up or whatever's wrong with them. And that's why John Goodman, who was talking in that, you want me to play any of that again? Because that is philosophy worth remembering. It's not bitter. It's just philosophy worth remembering. So that's it. The Montreal Jewish News is connected to True Talk Radio, where you can get me twice a day during the weekdays. Get me? You can listen to these shows. Remember, these shows are available here, there, and everywhere during the week on other stations or what have you. You go to the, just find them. You know how to find them. JuicedTalk.com. And the return of Tom Savino, we hope, as August? Listen to that. August looms its steamy head. We hope we'll be back. If you want to wish Tom best while he's recuperating from a physical event, I don't want to say, yeah, just, you know, it's a physical event. Please, Twitter, at TJ Savino, at TJ Savino, and I'm sure he'll be happy to hear from everybody because he's that kind of a guy. And when he gets back, him and I may be putting some junk together for you for some other entertaining purposes. Entertaining purposes, okay? You can learn things from anyone and anything that you listen to, read, or what have you. But, right? You could, but there's not, we're not the source of education for anything. But anyway, I'm happy, always happy, for any time that you take out of your life to listen to what we do here. What else is coming up through the weeks? We have, what do we have? You know, I was thinking today, let's get in touch with Gary Popoli. You got to get Gary Popoli here. I promised Dr. Karen Wyatt, and she promised me she'd come back on. And there are other people who are going to come back on, including Stacy Lane Wilson. She's been so busy, but we'll get her again, too. We'll get Dr. Woldar before school starts again because, you know, Villanova. You know, college never stops, right? There's always something going on, summer, fall, winter, spring. So there's that. Oh, I also wanted to say the other one. Okay, Montreal Jewish News is also 148.ca/Frank. Every week a new one. And no matter what happens to me, think about this. I already have done all of 2018. So whatever happens to me, there'll be fresh material from me. I'm not foreseeing. I'm not projecting or forecasting. I'm not desiring anything to happen to me that would be so cataclysmic that I could not write again. That also, though, aside from what I was telling you, that also could raise the price of all these books. And then what good does it do me? Nada más, as they say in Spanish. You want to, oh, and also, rocket science at foreculture.com. And if you're into people talking about things, live streaming from YouTube on Tuesday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Forethought, with the artist D, Ray Catolo, Frank Catolo, Mac, and Adam. And sometimes other people, and sometimes not even all those people. Because that's a big thing now on YouTube, people talking. Just talking, groups of people talking. And sometimes hard to follow. Sometimes it's hard to follow for us, and we're on the panel. But Rocket Science is on foreculture.com on the website. That's once a month. And it's very different from the other stuff. Not that the other stuff is the same of it. It really runs a gamut. Runs a gamut? Does it run the gamut? Yeah, it runs the gamut. So there's that. And that's it. I'm going to doodle here. I'm going to give a call to Mr. Brock Lorab. As you know him, I know him under other names. And I'm one of those guys. I'm in the inn. This is, what else can I tell you about this? I don't know. So, you know, I should say, and the interview with Brock Lorab starts now. No. I don't know. But, and back to the Urban Dictionary, okay? I want to know where these things came from. I want to know who started saying nothing burger. It's a nothing burger? So that it doesn't have any meat in it? It's a nothing burger. It's two pieces of bread without a burger? It's a nothing burger. This phrase has come about. So I need to watch that Urban Dictionary thing in terms of what's going on. The best way, and what I found in my research, because I hanged out. I know it sounds incorrect, but it's right. I hanged out with so many millennials over the past 3 years or what have you that I picked up what they really say and how they really talk. And this Urban Dictionary thing is, I'm a little disappointed. But, you know, so many things are free and you can get so many things and they're all there. You try them out. LitHub is, I'm going to recommend that one, LitHub, Literary Hub. They have a newsletter that brings you to their website. They send you off to some great articles, not just about writing, but about books, not just reviews, but analysis and literary criticism, all sorts of stuff. Really good. And you know me, and if you don't know me, you will after I mention this particular element. I like to stay somewhat studious and somewhat academic, not completely or what have you. But I believe in looking at it all, reading it all, and seeing what happens. That's just the way I am. And I encourage you. That's why, you know, my books are entertaining, but I think, you know, it's good to read is what I'm saying, okay? It's the edge of that heat, or as they said in Brooklyn, it's not the heat, see, it's the humidity. Speaking of Brooklyn, I think it's time. Let me go to my Skype and call Mr. Where's the call? Mr. Brock LaRob. Mr. Brock LaRob. Wait, it's connecting. It's connecting. It says connecting. Remember what happened with, were you here a couple of weeks ago with Echo? Here it goes again, connecting. See? And then, what happened? Connecting to Brock LaRob, our guest. This is Cotolo Chronicles. Connecting with Brock LaRob. No, it says, call failed. The call shouldn't fail. You know? Let's try it again. Mr. Brock LaRob. We're looking for Mr. Brock LaRob. We're calling Mr. Brock LaRob here on Skype. I never know whether Skype's the problem. It's not me. I'm not the problem. I know I'm not the problem. There might be a problem on his end. As amazing as this technology presents itself, there's just all this. Look at this call failed. Let me give him a little note here. Because you can do that too. Are you there? No one picks up. I don't want to send a video message. I don't have a video in here. The Skype is always changing too. You know, this box is always coming up going, there's a new version, there's a thing, there's a what. He might have just walked away for a minute or what have you. Brooklyn Roads. I'm not a big Neil Diamond fan. Are you a fan? Fanned? Fanned? Why are these other letters creeping their way into my into my words, into my speech here? I don't know. Let's see. Maybe if I put myself on, this is, what am I? I'm Frank Cotolo, man of the name of doing the title of the show. What do we got here? 27th of July, as I told you. This is the last July show. We're going to go. He's calling me now. He's calling me now. I picked it up.
I picked it up.
And there, how come you didn't answer?
Well, I answered now.
I answered now. You did indeed. You weren't answering. Skype just bothers me.
With you and me both.
But let's see if we can hear you okay. You got a decent connection. I have no idea, and you don't have to tell the audience where you're located now. I have no idea what's going on, but just say something and say a little something.
I hear you loud and clear. Did you hear me?
Yeah, you're just a little muffled. I don't know why that is.
Let me see if I can fix something.
Fix something.
How's that?
Well, that was weird. Try it again. Say hello.
How's that?
Well, it's not much different.
Let me ask you something. The icon that's on the bottom here, the microphone, am I supposed to click on it?
I think if you click on it, you'll mute it. Try it.
No, I don't want to do that.
Okay. You got, because there's a whistle and everything. You know, let's do this. Let me call you. Maybe my connection is better. So, in other words, hang up and then pick it up when I call you.
Oh, no, I got it. Oh,
there, I see. You're on a video. I'm not on video. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. How's that?
That's good. Okay. I can see you. I'm sorry. You can't see me, though. I don't have my video cam on, but that's okay.
That's okay. You know, I have a great voice for radio.
You do. You do indeed. And the background looks familiar. You're at the same place you were. And how could I remember from the last time I saw you?
I'm in the Brooklyn Museum.
You're in the Brooklyn Museum?
I'm joking.
I know, because that painting behind you is not from Brooklyn. What would it be doing in the Brooklyn Museum? Hey, how are you? It's been a long time since you've been here.
I'm great, and it's great to be back. And, you know, it's just, life is good. It's all good. Doing a lot of traveling, a lot of writing, a lot of speaking, things busy, but you know, I like to loaf too.
You like what?
I like to loaf. I'm a good loafer.
Right, you're a loafer.
My father was a better loafer.
I know they don't, a lot of people won't get that. But I do. You know, I was watching a movie, I thought of you earlier, I was watching a movie, The guy, and I don't know his real name. You know his real name. The bald guy who you
Bobby
are.
Bobby Barber.
Is that his name? The guy from Abbott and Costello?
Yeah, Bobby Barber.
Bobby what?
Bobby Barber.
Bobby Barber. I'm watching a movie, 1940 movie.
Okay.
the Conquest of the City.
City for Conquest.
There you go. City.
With James Cagney.
Yeah, my pal. My James Cagney guy. And he's, and this guy, they, boy, I'm telling, talk about typecasting, right? They made him one of the guys in boxing. He's one of the guys on the other side. Now, he's not one of Cagney's crew there at the, in
he's
the ring.
Tournament.
He's the,
no, wait a minute. No, the bald guy in that scene, that wasn't Bobby Barber, that was Ben Weldon.
No, it was the same guy, wasn't it?
No, Ben Weldon is a different bald guy.
Yeah, but I thought this was the same guy.
I gotta send you a picture of Bobby Barber.
I thought this was the same guy.
I'm a Bobby Barber
fan. No, I thought it was the same guy. I'm wrong?
No, Bobby Barber is an early Evan and Costello, TV shows, he's in a ton of movies. Well, Bobby Barber, me and my brother do a thing where if we watch a movie and spot Bobby Barber, we immediately text each other.
I thought for sure it was this guy. I gotta look him up.
It's Ben Weldon. Ben, you're thinking about the guy who shot, the director there that was in the movie with the hook nose, Elia Kazan. He shot him in the back, right?
Yeah, Ilya Kazan is in that, but I didn't. Who yeah. He got shot in the back?
Did you see the whole movie?
Yeah, I did. In fact, I saw the whole movie for the first time. I don't remember ever seeing it all the way through.
Remember, they find out that the fight was rigged because they put the rosin on the gloves, and right, Ilya Kazan was going to take Ben Weldon, the baldy trainer,
you're right.
To the dock, and he was going to kill him, and then he dropped the gun, and Ben Weldon shoots him in the back and kills him.
Oh, okay. That's Ben Logan. You're right. That's Ben Logan. Okay. Oh, you're right. I remember the scene. I did see it. And I'm not going to argue with somebody who, when I just bring it up, knows every frame of the movie. Okay. You're right.
Hey, ask me something important.
I know. I know your remarkable talent for these things.
Ask me what interest rates were. Who the hell knows?
That's not even the most well received James Cagney movie, and yet you've got it down. Well, that's.
But you know, I got a confession to make among many. When I was doing research writing, film research writing, Ann Sheridan was one of my topics, and so I had a researcher, and she was very good in that movie, by the way. Corny, but she was in that. Anthony Quinn is good in that. I got a kick out of his part in that movie.
Yeah, his early movies are funny. But then again, there's so much that's funny about
Cesar,
that.
Cesar Romero was originally supposed to have that role, but had to back out for another engagement, and Anthony Quinn took it over.
Wow. See, who would have known that? He would have worked, I.
Oh, yeah.
I guess. But anyway. That was one of the, I don't know, you probably know this, because Cagney went on to produce his own movies, and
yes.
That was one, it was one of his first, if not the first, was it? 1940?
That was still in the Warner Brothers. And actually, he was in movies from 1930. He popped up in a 1929 movie, you just saw his face.
I know Warner Brothers, he was with Warner Brothers, but he started his own production company.
Yes.
William Cagney, produced this, so he was involved with him, and they bought the rights of these books, and this was a book, at the time. So I was thinking that might have been a Cagney, production, even though, Warner Brothers released all those movies.
Right? Yeah, they got the release. And yeah, Cagney did, on his own production company, a movie called The Great Guy. And there was one that was just god awful, unfortunately. It was Blood on the Sun. And
yeah, Blood on the Sun.
Robert Armstrong was playing, Tojo.
Well, my favorite of all time, and definitely one of my top films of all time, is A Lion is in the Streets.
Oh, yeah, A Lion in the Streets. Yeah,
that's A Lion is in the Streets from a great book or it was a play or whatever. It was really shot like a play. Really good. But anyway, when you wrote to me and said you wanted to talk about after school specials, I said, like, well, okay. I mean, I don't know if I would even care to talk to anybody but you about after school specials, because this is not something in my past, but what there is to know about it. But of course it is a pop culture, and the fact that it has changed so much, things have changed so much. I think it'll be interesting to a lot of people, to know what the hell you want to talk about and what are after school specials. Why don't you describe what is or was an after school special?
Well, first of all, a lot of people want to know what the hell I'm talking about. And that's okay. You know, I'm good with that. Cause I basically tell them, look, I have no talent, but I like to do a lot of things. But anyway, you know what got me, doing a lot of traveling, you know, being in a lot of airports. Airports never have been so quiet. And the reason why they're so quiet is everybody has their heads down and they're in these, they got their faces glued to these, $700-$800 little things that they have in their palms and that they keep, punching in. And what the hell is so important that they have their heads down? And, I noticed it's all kids do today. Well, we, and you know this very well also, you know, we come home from school as, of course, kids. And, before we ran out to the after school center, which, we could run to, we didn't have any parents that could drive us everywhere like today. We'd run home, and I know, I would be able to, we'd get out of school at 10 minutes to 3, and that was enough time to get home because Abbott and Costello was on at 3 o'clock. Yeah. So, and after the Abbott and Costello show at 3:30, we'd go to the after school center. And then, of course, everybody that was to play punch ball or whatever it was, you know, Mr. Leota, and Mr. Peralia and Mr. Lipkin, they'd be there. But in the winter, if you didn't want to go out, it was a plethora of things. So you did your homework. You watched Evan Costello. WPIX in New York, they broke it up a lot. They'd even sometimes at 3:30 would have Popeye with Captain Jack McCarthy. He was a captain. Before him, there was a guy by the name of Alan Swift. And Alan Swift did a lot of voiceovers for cartoons.
Yeah.
And one of the highlights, usually once a week, because it was on every afternoon, he would sing Blow the Man Down with a baritone voice. So we all kind of waited for that. He would sing it. And then they'd show Popeye cartoons, the old ones, the good ones, you know, with the doors closing. And then we'd have Superman. Superman was on with George Reeves. And then it's funny because WPIX, I didn't watch WNEW, Channel 5, too much. They had this Sandy Becker show. I wasn't much of a Sandy Becker fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I just couldn't get into his characters. You know, he had puppets, too, you know, and he used to do the funny voices, although I did like his German accent puppet. That was good. But you had Officer Joe Bolton. Now, Joe Bolton, he started out WPIX, he was the weatherman. And remember when TV stations used to sign off right before the national anthem, and they usually would sign off about 1 in the morning, they would give you a brief, like, 3-minute news for the end of the day, and then they would give you weather for the morning and the next day, and then the national anthem. Well, Joe Bolton, he was the weatherman.
Joe Bolton was, I remember Joe Bolton. Let me interrupt you for 1 second there, though, because I think that we got to tell people, especially younger people, are going, what are you talking about in terms of these PIX and DIXs? I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there, and we've had people from that era on the show, so some people understand, but this is a local. Brock is talking about local television. I mean, today, you know, the idea of local television is really gone out the window, okay? So we're talking about stations, and remember, this is New York City, so it's not comparable with, you know, Lawrenceville, Ohio, or,
or Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, or even that, right. So what we're talking about is a specific local, these are local personalities working at local stations. Today, all we get are local, I get in local news people. And, you know, technology has changed so much that that looks, you know, just as good as the networks, you know, because they all have the technology. But we're talking about the days when, the weatherman had to put magnets of suns on, on a map of the state to show you it was sunny upstate, and then a magnet of clouds, and then another magnet had clouds with rain on it, you know, so that's the way they dealt with it. And we're also talking about when these after school shows, these shows that were geared towards children getting out of school, a grade school kids, I think this really didn't go into, it didn't go much into high school and stuff. We all were out there. And I remember a lot of the people you're talking about because they were around when I'm a little older than you. So I remember them before you started to see them. They were still around, these guys. Could, what else the hell could they do? You know, really, you know, I mean, and I have talked in the past about guys like the ones who really were, even then I knew, I didn't know anything. I just looked at him and I went, is this guy nuts? Oh, how did this guy get on television? Guys like Claude Kirshner.
Claude Kirshner, yeah. My favorite.
And, okay, but now I'm going to give back to you and remind everyone that Brock is talking about specifically what went on. You know, if you lived in, you know, if you lived in New Jersey or Pennsylvania, you couldn't see the shows he's talking about because they had their own guys. You know, I run into guys, the other day I ran into some, a friend of mine out here says to me, he says, well, I spent the morning with radio legend, I'm not going to mention his real name, I'll just say, with radio legend Joe Schmelko. And I went, this guy you call a legend? Joe Schmelko? Everyone knows Joe Schmelko around here because he was on, you know, this station. It's like, Joe Schmelko? What are you, nuts? You know, I have no idea about this guy, and I refuse to address him as a legend, okay? It will not happen. But
I mean,
so,
it's not like he was Herb Oscar Anderson.
Well, Herb, hello again. Here's my best to you. I played that. We've talked about Herb. We talked about Herb when he died here.
Yeah. And I remember that. Yes.
And played that song until we were all sick and glad he was gone. I know I mean that, but then you know what I mean. Anyhow, so we're talking about that. And so those of you out there, because this is global, those of you out there from anywhere, you know, this is the morning show in Baghdad.
Yes.
So you guys are out there thinking about, you know, Tehran Jeff or whatever his name, Tehran Jeff or whatever his name was that you watched when you were kids. You know, Baghdad Bob, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe it was Baghdad Bob and he showed Popeye, or did he show, what would he show? Anyway.
I don't know, Baba.
Baba. The sailor. Baba the sailor, man. Here's, we're going to go back now to Brock's explanation. I just wanted to clear that up because there's so many people out there. Oh, I want to clear up one more thing. Those phones that people are looking at wherever they go, airport, they don't cost anywhere near $800, Brock. So most phones people get for free as long as they sign up for yearly, you know, stuff. So I don't know. I think you got to.
No, I walked in there and gave my dollar and said, here, I'm in for 4 years.
Yeah, so maybe you need to get with that program. But in the meantime, how about these other programs? Here, we're talking now about Officer Joe Bolton.
And I'm working up to a point here.
Okay, I understand that, and I know you're going to do that because this is, you're a pop culture master. You're a master of pop culture. You're the professor of pop culture. Here goes. Yeah. It's all yours. Go.
So anyway. By the way, we didn't mention Chuck McCann, and I love Chuck McCann to this day. I love Chuck McCann.
Y'all, I'm going to tell you, I've met Chuck, and,
yes,
recently a friend of mine who does stand-up comedy, I write some comedy for him, he's out there in LA, he ran into Chuck McCann, and he gave him his number, and I said, well, you gotta get, and he invited him to the home, or his home for coffee. I said, stop,
yeah.
Hold your profession, because I'm always telling this guy, you know, and he's been on this show before. I said, I'm always telling him, you gotta know, because he's young, And they don't, you know, they only know of these people. They don't.
Yeah.
See, you've got to be able to get everything you can from these people, especially they're dinosaurs, and they know so much about show business and comedy and everything. You've got to go and talk to them. But Chuck is still around, alive and cool.
And Chuck, what always rings in my mind with Chuck McCann is he would say, "Yes, sirree, Bob." And I used to think, "Yes, sirree, Bob." Well, I did a little research about that. But anyway, so WPIX, which was local channel 11 in New York City, you know, had 12 stations.
Right.
Anywhere from after school, the Adventures of Fazuti, you know, right up through Fireman Todd Russell, and the Three Stooges always worked the internet, you know. But anyway, that was fun stuff. That was fun, you know. You'd sit and, you know, maybe you're doing your homework, but then the Three Stooges come on and you put your pencil down, and it's the Three Stooges, and it was fun stuff. You know, we laughed. We don't have that. Nobody laughs today.
Well, now hold on a second. Hold on a second. Nobody laughed at a lot of the stuff that we laughed at. But I've been exposed to a lot of the stuff that kids or millennials or whatever, you know, laugh at.
How you met your mother, that you laughed at that?
No, I'm saying I've been exposed to it. I understand what they laugh
at.
I see it in context. Kids have trouble watching the Three Stooges because it gets, you know, the hitting and the stuff, it gets old very quickly with them.
And that's what I can't understand.
You can't understand because they always found something else to hit each other with, and that was like, well, yeah.
And there was sound effects.
I know, but it was still hitting. It's like, what do these guys do? They just smack each other. What? That's crazy.
That's funny.
It is funny. Of course, slipping on a banana peel and stuff is funny. And kids and
an anvil falling on Curly's head and the anvil breaking it in half. That's hilarious.
I'm not saying it's not hilarious. I'm just saying that in context.
I know exactly what you're saying because I have this argument every day when I talk to people. When I talk to the young people, I get funny looks and like, really? You're weird.
It's hard to make reference to a lot of this stuff to younger people who don't understand. They're not very interested in what, you know, where their heroes came from, and yet it's all part of the bloodline. This is a big thing with me because I'm always telling people, even if I see something, one of these new things they're laughing at, and I'm going like, well, do you know that that's a spinoff of a routine, you know, that was done done by the Ritz brothers in 19, and who, to what, to where, to when, every generation wants to believe their thing is the thing, right?
Yes, correct. Absolutely positive. But unfortunately, well, you know what they do with the garbage in California?
Yeah, they make it into television shows.
They make it into a TV show. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
That was a television joke. Well, because television has always tried to appeal to the mass, to the masses. Now, you and I remember, well, I don't know if you remember, but I remember when Officer Joel Bolton started his show and introduced the Three Stooges to the new generation, because we didn't know.
Yes.
We didn't know them. We,
precisely.
TV people, TV kids growing up back then, what Brock is talking about, we're TV kids. We only saw the World War II movies and the things that went on from before the war, we only saw those things on TV limited. We didn't have Turner Classic. We couldn't sit down and watch and binge. Mm-hmm. I couldn't binge on Edward G. Robinson, you know, movies, and they were not available. These were for the first time these things were coming on television. And opposite Joe Bolton, and that was very controversial when the Three Stooges came on, because that was really that gratuitous violence. There's no way, you know, it made their careers, became very popular, it brought their careers back to some semblance of work.
Well, yeah. Mo Howard was even on the Three Stooges show with Joe Bolton a couple of times. He had Mo on.
They owed a lot to television, because television brought back, it wasn't like Abbott and Costello, as you say, who were making movies and then given television, like a lot of stars from movies did in the 50s. They went to TV. The Three Stooges did not have a show. They were showing these shorts.
Yeah, short subjects, yes.
From this ridiculous little film factory in Columbia Pictures, where these guys made just... I would love to know, and someone must have written some kind of history of that. There was a TV movie made by one of their biggest fans, Mel Gibson. Did I say Mel Gibson? Is that his name? Yeah. Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson. Why does that sound wrong? That's right. Isn't it Mel Gibson?
That's who it is. Yeah.
He's a huge, Three Stooges fan, and he made this TV movie. I never saw it again. It was on once or twice.
Oh, was Michael Chiklis? He was in that. He played Curly.
Don't even remember the names of these guys.
Now, the made-for-TV movie about the Three Stooges—that was I thought that was terrific. That was a really good movie. It really went behind the, and got underneath what they were about and how Columbia Pictures screwed them. And Mo Howard was a pretty savvy guy. But I thought that was an excellent movie. It was the movie that they made afterwards that was in the theaters. I didn't even bother to see that.
That was just using those characters.
That's the Three Stooges in situations, in their situations. They start out as census takers, and at the end of the short, they're fools.
Mel Gibson is a tremendous fan of the Stooges, and he, I believe, produced that TV thing. Which is all, it's great. Why, I don't know why, kids who want to be in show business need to look at show business history. And that's that's a real bit of show business history. I wonder, they were knocking those things out over three decades, at least three decades, like, I don't know how many, a month, but that's all they were doing.
I think, my memory, serves me, I think they were able to do one of those shorts within 2.5 days. They were able to complete them. Everything was ready to go. And, of course, back then you went to the movies, you saw two movies, two cartoons, a newsreel, and a Three Stooges short.
Yeah.
So, again, TV was their medium, because they came on TV, and, they shot the star of all the products, hand puppets and lunch boxes and,
The licensing was good. TV was definitely good to them. But,
Paul Winchell, too, he had a really pretty good, stake in that. He had something a little innovative. They weren't marionettes or hand puppets. They were actually puppets that sat on his lap. And he was a very interesting guy. I thought he was very funny, very subtly funny. He had a lot of good jokes that he did. And I remember he was on a Steve Allen show, and he was there, and he didn't have any puppets there. And Steve Allen says, well, where's Jerry Mahoney and Knucklehead? And he says, well, Jerry can't make it. He's got laryngitis.
Paul Winchell. We did something about, I don't remember when, but we did some stuff about Paul Winchell. And of course, the name Knucklehead Smith, I think is just, that's the greatest name. How could you name any? I wish people could just see that guy, see it. But of course, Paul Winchell, we also did, because Paul, we also mentioned that Paul Winchell was, and patented, the first artificial heart.
Yes.
And because my father, who was a plumber, fixed his toilet bowl once, fixed his toilet. No, but that's a my father's story. It's a whole no. That's a whole
stream. Another show.
That's a stream of shows. My father's and his toilets. But yes, Paul Winchell, and we have this. We've had a couple of ventriloquists on, and that people actually still do this and have their own puppets and everything. And Paul Winchell always comes up as a major influence.
Sure, Sharia Lewis too. Now Sharia Lewis, she was a woman. She kind of cornered the market with her ventriloquism, and you know, back then there weren't too many ladies that had their own shows, right. Especially in the '50s and as such. And she was extremely talented. She had a sock, two dots, and like felt lips, and you had puppets. I mean, that's ingenious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know much about the rest of her life. I don't know how she did make a living throughout that day. She's an interesting one. Let me just tell everyone here as we come into the second hour. It's Brock LaRob, who's here again after a while. And we're talking about we're talking about what kids watched after school and what have you back in the days of New York television, which really led the parade of programming. And from there, I mean, you know, if you were Joe Bolton, you were on in the top neighborhood. That was like being the big disc jockey in New York, because the guy who was showing the Three Stooges, you know, at the affiliate in Oatmeal, Nebraska, he was like, "Whoa, geez, boy, one day if I could do this in New York." Of course, he didn't talk like that. But so a lot of you must know, local. Everyone's grown up with. I dropped the name the other day to somebody. I dropped the name of someone said, "That guy has a very weird shape." We were looking at some guy we didn't know, we just introduced to. And I said, "Yeah." I said, "His body kind of reminds me of Coco the Clown." And the person said, "What?" This person's not even that much younger than me, but younger. What? It's like, we're talking like 15, 20 years. What? Coco the Clown? I don't expect you to remember Coco the Clown. He came from an inkwell. And... And it was like, suddenly, it's like I was talking about, you're talking about a Salvador Dali painting or something. It's like, no, it's that ridiculous. Coco the Clown. And, you know, people don't know it. So
I got one for you. I'm in the Midwest, and somebody's got a really crazy looking sport jacket. So I said, "Look at that. The guy's got a Lindsey Nelson jacket."
Lindsey Nelson.
And wow. He gave me a look like, "Oh, is that a designer?" And I went, "Oh, you know what? Never mind. I'm in the wrong spot."
These things that pop up in various movies that have to do with the past. For instance, the other day, again, I say again because I watched it again. I don't know why critics don't like the third movie of, it's not a series, but you know, it's like, you know, Godfather 1, Godfather 2, and everybody goes, "Oh, not Godfather 3, I hate it." Every third one stinks to critics. I don't know, why can't you go beyond 2? Well, I like Men in Black 3. Okay. I think there's, you know, it's like, come on, how could you, I mean, if you hold Men in Black 1 and 2 up to a standard of like Dostoevsky, you know, and then 3 comes along. Well, of course. I mean, it's just, but how different is it? How bad is it? I mean, I don't understand why they go so nuts. "Oh, no, I can't watch 3. Forget about it." Well, anyway, I'm watching it, and of course, excuse me, I say, of course, like if you haven't seen it, Will Smith's character goes into the past. And in this case, the past is 1969.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
You haven't seen Men in Black 3?
No, I
haven't. He goes back to 1969. Okay, this is like, it's amazing to think.
That the thing, olden days.
Right. He had to go back to 1969, the week that that NASA sent the...
And on the moon.
Moonshot, yeah.
You're in my house watching that, by the way.
Some of it, yeah. I do remember some of it in your... Yes. Yeah, I was in your house at one point watching it. Wow.
Yeah.
I was all over. I watched that in about 20 different houses. It was very long. I had to change my atmosphere. I had to change the scenery, you know, because those guys were moving.
I'm more than the astronaut.
Oh boy. It's one of my favorite jokes I tell. I have told, tons of times is that, and I'll tell it again for those who haven't heard it. And that is that when they were going to the moon, the first land on the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz and the gang there. Buzz and the gang. It sounds like another afternoon show. There was a contest. NASA had a contest. They made a real promotional thing. And that is, what is Neil Armstrong going to say when he steps on the moon? He'll be the first man on the moon. And kids, in schools everywhere and various places, I guess I was, when would I be in? I would have been in college. And I decided to send in something. Of course, we all know the famous thing, the person who won because he said, of course, that's one small step for man and one giant leap, right, for mankind. That's what it said. But, and I lost. And I'm telling people, I don't understand how I lost. How did I lose that one? And they said, well, what did you tell him to say when he put his foot and became the first man on the moon? I said, I wrote, "Hey, Frank, I made it." And they, I don't know why I didn't win that contest. I thought it was a great idea, but, you know, I purposely left out my last name, so it didn't get, I just, you know, thought it would be.
He must have said that under his breath, though.
Yeah, maybe he did. Anyway, let's go back, enough about me, let's go back to, to Joe Boltman and whoever else they were. You're in what grade when you're watching these?
Who turned up in Men in Black?
Oh, they went back in time, right? They went back to 1969, but I'm saying the kids are watching this, or kids or anybody, you don't have to be a kid anymore. And this is how old we've become, watching are learning about 1969 in this movie, like, as if it's like the dinosaur age.
Joe Bolton, who's, again, a weatherman, and he even turned up in a couple of Three Stooges movies.
Well, you know, when they were making movies after their television.
With Joe DiRita, who has a lot of fans, by the way. WPIX Channel 11, which was the big local station, of course, just like WWOR, which was Channel 9, another big local station, WNEW Channel 5, another big local station. WNEW Channel 5 in the afternoon, if you're home from school sick, and I never was, because it's my mother, I was never sick. You got 107 fever, you know, go to school. All right. They had Uncle Fred Scott, and Uncle Fred Scott had Cartoon Playtime Part 1.
Well, I don't remember him at all.
And after that, Cartoon Playtime Part 2.
I don't remember Fred Scott at all. I'd have to look him up. I don't remember Uncle Fred.
Uncle Fred Scott. And he also did the news, the voiceover news before they signed off. But what I also thought was interesting was a guy by the name of Soupy Sales came on the scene. And he was big in Detroit. He started in Detroit doing some kid shows, but then he came to New York, and his show just took off.
Who?
Soupy Sales.
Oh, Soupy, of course. Soupy came to, yeah.
Soupy is not Soupy. And then what Channel 11 did, they tried to emulate that. And, of course, television is a copycat business. So they had a guy also did the news on the weekends. He did the voiceover news on the weekends. His name was Bill Beery. And he was Beachcomber Bill.
I vaguely remember that.
And he was god awful. Soupy would get a pie in his face. Well, Bill Beery, Beachcomber Bill, would get water squirted in his face because he was a beachcomber. And
He would get water just squirted in his face.
You know, he'd say something silly,
and they would. Oh, okay.
Get the water squirted in his face. It was terrible. And I think did they show cartoons? I think, no, he showed the Three Stooges also.
Really?
And wow. Yeah, because for some reason, Joe Bolton went on high. Oh, I think it's when Joe Bolton went, was doing those Three Stooges movies. They needed somebody to fill in, and he was doing it.
Okay.
But he was terrible. He was terrible. but again, leading up to, you know, again, we thought that was funny stuff, but we also, if, you know, you, and I'm trying to think of the station, and I think it was it a local station? Walt Disney Presents. Now, Walt Disney Presents, yeah, and then Walt Disney, of course, was a history, American history buff. And that's where I got to learn at a very young age, I mean, very young age, about the Swamp Fox. And one of my favorite shows was Zorro. And
yeah.
And those shows, Texas John Slaughter, and those shows were basically simple plots, but you knew who the good guys were, you knew who the bad guys were. And they kept it that way. And Davy Crockett, okay, Fess Parker's career was through the roof because he was Davy Crockett. I mean, I think that's where merchandising really took off with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's, aren't you too young for that? Did you get that on the rebound? Because I was pretty young when that was first on. And you got a couple of years behind me. I don't know if you get it on the rebound.
We had the TV on right when I came out of the shoot.
Yeah, I know.
I was watching TV.
Your brother would probably more. I think your brother would remember that more on the first run.
Well, I could remember very vividly watching Zorro and.
Well, that was later. Yeah, but I mean, but yeah, the Davy Crockett thing.
Even the Davy Crockett. Because I think they would show those continuously.
Oh, yeah. They showed them again, and they made a couple more. There were a couple of them.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But you're right about the marketing when it came out. Because I have somewhere, I even still have one of the Coonskin Gaps somewhere here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they had the plastic muskets and Bessie. Bessie was the rifle.
Yes, I was in Knoxville recently doing some things. I got to see Davy Crockett's first musket
on
display, and it was authenticated. And I think I've spoken about this before. We knew who the good guys were. We knew who the bad guys were. And there was always the message was, don't be a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. And if you are, go to the bad guy store to get your clothing because you can't. There's no way to disguise yourself.
The bad guys are who the good guys are.
Because it's like the when the anti-hero appeared in books and then, of course, in movies and stuff, and things started to change. Yes. But if you – and 2 weeks ago, I think Shane was on again completely from beginning to end. And that is – the quintessential template of a good, you know, good guy, bad guy stuff. It's like this.
Yeah.
And it's just like over after that. I mean, you watch Shane and you go, it's over. It's like, what are you going to do? Every guy with a black hat, just shoot him and there's no story. Shoot the guy. Move on. You know, it's like, well, what are we going to do? Put a story here? We know who the bad guy is. Just shoot him, hang him, get it over with. Run him over with a stagecoach or something. Drag him to the streets with horses. You know, and all that stuff, of course, dates back to telling stories and legends and myths. And if anybody reads, we always talk here about, we've talked many times about Joseph Campbell and how the history of myths through religions and more like that. Now the same old story is told over and over again. It wasn't over, by the way, because when they took it into space, Darth Vader took over and it was a good guy, bad guy. This is the same crap we've been watching on different platforms for years. You know? And with the different twists and stuff, but we definitely see it in, the lines have gotten thinner between who they were, but what's your point? Your point is, well, it was easy, to recognize the good guys and the bad guys, but what are you saying in terms of that? And now?
Well, now is the perception is it's okay to be a bad guy once in a while.
Well, like who? What do you mean? Who's like going to be?
Well, let's see. Recently, there's a movie that had come out that he was going crazy over. Deadpool. Okay?
Oh, Yes. Yeah.
And He was a good guy, right?
He was a good guy who became a superhero because he had cancer. That little twist really got me. And he was a snotty eye talking guy. Well, you know who changed that.
But he was kind of a jerk.
But you know who changed that whole deal? That was when Marvel Comics brought characters that were different, were out of the mold of the Superman. You're the bad guy. I'm the good guy.
Away from that because it was blah.
They had to do something different, see if they had an audience. Of course, they did have an audience because it was different, but it was still the same old, jumping around good guy, bad guys. But they tried to, also, what they tried to do was make the bad guys, give the bad guys a reason. And that opens it up to, like, psychological interpretation, remember? I mean, there was a reason why some of these superhero bad guys became bad guys. As opposed to Lex Luthor, who was just what? Was he born of a jackal? What was his childhood? Do you ever remember Lex Luthor as a kid? What, was he just born evil?
I think if you go to the Superboy comics, there's young Lex Luthor there.
Yeah, I'm sure he's no wonderful friend to have.
He's wearing that same khaki uniform in the second grade.
Yeah, he's not the kid down the block. They don't know what to do. But today is a lot different, and there are a lot of them. But I mean, even Spider-Man. Remember, they made Spider-Man in the comics, and then in the movies, they portrayed the fact that he was not a good guy to the people. They were trying to say, hey, he's a bad guy.
No, come on, he's a good guy. You know, recently there was a movie out. It was a terrific movie called Hell in High Water.
I want to see that. Did you see it? I heard it was very good.
I thought it was the best movie of the year last year. I thought it was terrific. You know what it was? It was an old-fashioned Western in modern day. And, but this is the kicker with this thing. Okay? The brothers are robbing banks because the bank screwed their mother. The good guys, the bad guys are the good guys because the banks are the bad guys. Okay? So,
well, you know, we have to go back to glorifying bad guys, and you have to go back to the story. I mean, go back to Robin Hood. I mean, there's nothing new about that either in legends and stuff, right?
But there was treachery there. It was treachery.
Well, yeah, but he was a bad guy, and if the good guy, the people who ran the world there caught him, they tried to kill him because he was stealing. Then it made stealing okay if you do it for this reason. You know, like that, right? So those guys, the guys in Hell and High Water, it's like, it's okay. Hey, your mother, this is also Bonnie and Clyde, right? Later, these are like become folk legends because the banks shut them down. Remember that scene in Bonnie and Clyde where the guy just gives them the gun, shoot the window open. A bank, bank took my thing. You know, I think it took your brain too, pal. Anyway, It's a world of difference. And now here's also something else here, Brock, and that is that the things that weren't allowed to be in movies, the censorship in terms of movies, really played a role in how you could depict people.
Very true. And the other thing too, exactly, you hit that right on the head. It's a very important point. But there's another item that, I used to care. Does anybody care anymore today? Does anybody care if somebody's good or bad or anything? I care. You know, if Superman grabbed that a revolver and bent it, that was good. I cared about that,
Well, you're a weird child.
Superman, if it was kryptonite and Superman fell, I was worried about him. As a matter of fact, I'm still worried about it.
that, of course, I think that when you watch, I think the people who've watched Superman movies realize that, I don't know about what people care about in terms of those characters, but you have to also remember that, kids growing up today have entirely different platforms. The interactive situation with kids today, and that would be video games and stuff. The interactive, that they could get involved. The one person shooter thing where you can, in these very graphic games where you walk around with your own gun and you, those kind of things. it's a lot different when you're in the story.
Yes.
You know, and we were a passive. There was no way not to be passive. They showed us this stuff and we saw it and watched it and we had to care about this, that, and the other thing. Otherwise, we walked away. There were things I didn't care about. I remember guys I liked getting it. I always thought, and the thing I didn't like, the thing that is later on in life when I met a lot of the people who I not looked up to, but at least, you know, watched as certain characters on television. And, you know, and then you learn that these are just people and they suck, most of them, you know, it's like when I watch, I heard something and you learn things, you hear things, and then people treat you. I mean, you know, meet Chuck Connors, he didn't treat you like he treated the kid and his son in A Rifle Man. You know, maybe that kid's got wonderful stories as an actor about how Chuck Connors, you know, but, you know, he's an asshole, you know? So the thing is, it affects you. It's like now you watch, and I'm watching The Rifleman, and I go like, wow, this is so wrong. And you get a taste in your mouth about not how phony. It's, you know, these guys really were great actors because I used to think he was a nice guy. You're on Cattolo Chronicles. Brock LaRob is here, and we're remembering one-dimensional heroes and TV tube stars and people who played in these plays. We saw these early TV things that were for kids. But of course, you know, now we're talking here about like primetime stuff anyway. But I think there's not a lot of difference, because even when you saw the detective things on the primetime television dramas and stuff, they were also under the same censorship rules.
Yes.
So, yeah, they were good guys, they were bad guys. The police,
well, yeah,
and the bad guys.
Yeah, let's see. I was just trying to think of a few of those shows that, the cops, they were the good, they were all the good guys. All the good guys. And that's what, you know what? That's what we wanted, right?
It's what?
Isn't that what we wanted? That's what we want.
Oh yeah, well I think so. Yes, of course you want good to be good and be spotless, clean and good.
I didn't know too many guys that root for the bad guys.
The thing is this: while we were watching all those guys and the cops and the Naked Cities and the Peter Guns and all that stuff, while this stuff was going on, there were thousands of city cops on the take doing the worst possible things. You know, you're right though. The absolute is what everybody wanted. And when you're a kid, of course, you know, back then, that's all they taught you. Black and white, good and bad. And, you know, and you would even be, admiring people who you didn't know, were criminals. And I say did criminal things. I shouldn't say they were criminals, but let's face it. Corruption was everywhere. When we were growing up and before that and that generation before that.
It's coming back.
Cops?
No, corruption. It's making a comeback.
A comeback? You let me know where it was hiding, okay, when it left? Cause I don't know. I think it's, yeah. Corruption takes a vacation. Death takes a holiday, you know. I do want to mention this, even though we have more time to talk. I want you to also plug your books. You got at least two books out there now, and see what else is coming up there. Why don't you do that?
My first book did okay. My second book did much, much better, and first book kind of piggybacked off that. So I'm very pleased how that has been going, and working on a third book. And so I got a couple of projects, working on a couple of articles, and the third book's being worked on. Hopefully it'll be out beginning of next year, and lining up some speaking off that. And it's just been good stuff. There's good stuff going on.
Having been influenced by good guys, bad guys, a lot of your books take that formula I don't mean to say they're formulaic and just lazy, what have you, but I'm just saying that you were influenced by the classic, just like I have, the classic dramatic good versus evil thing in characters.
Yes.
And your stories follow that, and you make up some history, which comments on history itself.
Exactly. And it, to me, it's, you know, just pretty simple. It's fun. I've had some, I was doing an interview a short while back, and I was asked, how, why do you do this? And I said, you know, I'm just going to be like, it's fun. I didn't expect to, drive a Cadillac off this. It's fun. It's something I like to do. To me, it's more than a hobby.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. And for all our great people out there, if they're interested, pull me up on Facebook, Tommy Nocerino. That's my pen name. And I've been getting some good reviews, a lot of hits, and it's been good. Like I said, the second book has done more than I expected, better than I expected. Thank you.
That's great. And, of course, all the things we might comment about, even negatively, in terms of audiences and their how they've changed because of the digital platform, that's the very same new media that allows people like you to have books and find an audience, right? Because people will find you. In the old days, if you wrote a book, I was writing stuff since I was a kid, and it was difficult to get people to read it, or you'd have to know people or pass it around. You can make copies. Yeah. Today, almost anyone can do it. And way too many people do. The platform has changed considerably. But yeah, so look for Tommy. Tommy. You kept Tommy? Huh? You kept Tommy. You didn't know, because Tommy's still more. Tommy. Always her kid. Tommy. You didn't go to Thomas. Thomas Nocerino as a pen name. You went to Tommy. Say Tommy. Right.
Yes.
You say Tommy. Yeah, what the hell, right?
It works.
Tommy Dorsey. I'm trying to think of adults that were known as Tommy and not Tom or Thomas. Tommy Dorsey was an adult.
Tommy Two-Tone.
Who?
Tommy Two-Tone.
Tommy Two-Tone, yeah. Okay. Tommy Tunes? Is that the guy?
Tommy Tune, yes. A very famous Broadway performer.
Tommy... It's hard to think of, it's not like Tommy Cruise. No, it's Tom Cruise. You can't say Tommy Cruise. It don't work.
So I'm a little unique in that respect.
We didn't even finish. I wanted to mention another one too. You mentioned Captain Jack, the, Popeye guy. That was Ray Heatherton.
No, Captain Jack was Jack McCarthy.
That was Jack McCarthy, but Ray Heatherton.
Ray Heatherton, he was the Merry Mailman.
He was the Merry Mailman, of course. Of course, that's right.
He looked like Jack McCarthy. I always thought they were one of the same.
The Merry Mailman, whose daughter became famous.
Yes, Joey Heatherton.
Joey Heatherton, who.
And Dick Heatherton, his son, was a New York DJ.
Was he really?
Yes, he's on WMW.
Dick Heatherton. Okay. I briefly knew Joey. We'll leave that story alone. Okay. But yeah, there's lots of people who don't. I was trying to remember. I did this show on the crazy conservative figures that were, preceded all the radio stuff that goes on now, going way back to
Joe Pine.
Yes, exactly. Joe Pine, Alan Burke.
Alan Burke.
And Downey. Downey Jr., who's...
Tom Horton, Downey Jr., yeah, Bob Grant.
Came from them, and Bob Grant, who I worked with. But I was trying to remember the guy, the really wacko guy in L.A., who I think he went network. His daughter became was a movie star. And I'm trying, do you remember, now I'll get this from you, because so many names have escaped me. Do you remember the movie The Cradle Will Rock?
Yes.
Who was the girl who was the crazy, who turned out to be the crazy girl? What was that actress? She was the daughter of the very famous, and I can't.
Kupcinet.
What is it?
Was it Irv Kupcinet?
Cup was different. I'm talking about the girl. She was the daughter of this guy who was
Became an actress also.
Oh, okay. Cup's kid.
Yeah. Cup's kid.
She was a 34 cup. No.
The Cradle Will Fall.
The Cradle Will Fall. And I can't think of the name of this actress. She went on to make a bunch of movies. And she was a daughter of this guy who was this guy was really wild. I mean, he used to throw his desk at his guests, and he was in L.A. for a long time, and I can't remember his name for anything. I still can't, and it didn't pop up, but I know that was his daughter, and I think somewhere on the interweb we could probably find out, but I can't even remember her name. I guess I go to international movie database and go to that movie on the database and find out her name. And it's amazing how it just she's gone. I mean, there's certain people and names just go with me. But
it'll come. I've got a picture.
And then to try to remember his name from that is another another story. Okay, we're still here with Brock LaRob. We talked about his books. You go look for his books there on Amazon. And later on, they had these really wimpy afternoon day after school specials. Is a big thing on the networks. Came ABC Afternoon, after school. Those crazy. I never, ever liked those. Do you know what I'm talking about? Did you watch any?
I do. Those were just namby-pamby. Oh, God. You know, they'd have, special guest star Judy Kavner, in these ridiculous movies. You know,
what did they do? They played
the girl on the quiz show or the boys on the math club. It was just god awful.
There were a lot of those. That was a regular thing. All the networks picked
after
up.
School special, yes.
And that was a network thing. It wasn't just local thing.
That was a network thing. ABC has started all that stuff.
They were going for, and I don't know what was their competition and why they decided to do that. They went for this.
Probably going up against the Mike Douglas show.
Well, the kids weren't watching Mike Douglas, were they? maybe that's when Sesame Street and the Electric Company, maybe that's when that stuff was going on.
Yeah, that was kind of later on. I think I was in high school when that stuff came on.
Yeah, yeah. The Electric Company. Tom Savino introduced me to the Electric Company. Believe it or not, I mean, he really dug that junk. And I didn't realize until years later that what's his name? The famous
Freeman.
Huh?
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman was on the Electric Company. Because I remember when we were doing our satires, we did the Gas Company. I don't think I need to say any more. We did the Gas Company when we were doing TV stuff, and we were doing those things. And there's a whole. You know the Dead Air syndicated show is on. Do you know it's on the web now? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I found that out recently. Actually,
you may. I don't know if we dug up. We dug up some many of the original tapes. It was a hell of a job for this guy who made them into digital. And there's still some missing. And I was trying to remember. I told him, I said, the one that Brock was in, I can't remember what that theme was for that. What was the theme of that show? Was it advertising? Was it?
The theme of that show was...
What was the theme? Because every show had a theme. And I said, we can't find that one. That one is... is lost. Will you remember? And we remembered.
Maybe if you punch in crunchy wunchies, it might pop.
Yeah, we looked. We looked at it. In fact, Tom and I were singing it. We remembered. We remembered a song. And because we played some bits on, for it before it was put up there on Juice Talk, where you can get most of them that have been that have survived. But I was trying to remember the one. I mean, in some more here and there voices, but I know you're prevalent in that one when we were selling the I don't know what we were selling. I know it was what was a commercial, something to do with commercials. There were all sorts of commercials with crunchy wunchies with the breakfast cereal. There was some crazy stuff, but the electric, and it was when PBS, who I like to know, who I like to call the pretentious broadcasting system, has, when they started that stuff with Sesame Street and the Electric Company,
yes,
maybe they were trying to do entertaining educational stuff on the channels. Maybe that was around that time. I don't have a chronology of that. But we weren't, you know, after school when we were in high school, so we weren't coming home and watching television.
No, because things did change. I mean, you had a whole different thing. A lot of the networks then went to movies at 4:30.
Yeah.
So you had the 4:30 movie, but even, you know, the local CBS in the late 50s also had a 4:30 movie. Channel 9 had Million Dollar Movie, which played the same movie every night for a week, and then on Saturday and Sunday played it three times each day.
Yeah, and the people don't understand that there were only so many movies, you know, and when they came on, for the first time.
Yes, yeah. And for instance, WOR Channel 9, they owned the rights to the block of all the RKO movies, so you saw all the RKO movies.
Yeah, because RKO, I think, and WOR were somehow connected.
Yes.
And so they got that library. And then you would see, CBS had a lot of MGMs. Yeah, that's how they would.
And NBC had a lot of Warner Brothers. WNEW had a lot of Warner Brothers.
That's how they were, divvy. I don't know how they really divvied
those. Yeah, distribution was a lot different back then.
And then these were all coming on television for the first time. That's why when you, it's remarkable to watch, or not to watch, just read, the menu of one week of what's on, Turner.
Yes.
It's just absolute. Now today, of all things today, and that's why City of Conquest, is that, what did I say it right?
City for Conquest. Directed by Anatole Litvak.
Yes. Today, and this is something they do that is terrific, because they'll show 17 movies that have one guy or one gal in it, you know?
Yes, yes.
Well, today they showed that for who do you think was the featured player? And I'll give you the movie that came on before it was Brother Orchard.
Oh, it was Donald Crisp was the
Yes, you're right. You got it. Donald Crisp. Now, if you say to anyone, so I'm watching this Donald Crisp movie. Now, even today, you're right. Today, you could still say Humphrey Bogart, and a lot of people will not, you know, sure. Know, even James Cagney. But if you say, I'm watching Donald Crisp. What I like to do is when I watch some of these movies with younger people is to point out the people around them who they'll know, you know. There's Frank McHugh. Was that his name? Frank? because I remember my dad had favorites, incredible favorites, and they were always the guys on the side, right? You know, like for instance, I'm going to drop a name here.
Ward,
you're right. He was on the side. Well, I'm going to drop a name for you right now. Eugene Paulette.
Oh yeah, you. Brian Tuck.
Yeah, well, I'll get you.
Let me tell you guys something.
That's the guy we wanted to be like the priest at our, in a local, St. Athanasius. You know, where's Eugene Paulette?
Where's Eugene Paulette?
You know? Hey, name of the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost, get out of here.
What's the matter with you guys?
What's the matter with you? My father liked, and he loved, so then guys, I got to know these guys because my father would point them out. He goes, that's,
sure, yeah.
He would go, that, I love that guy, that's Franklin Pangborn.
Yeah.
He knew his names. I learned that I love to do that with, even I did it with my kids, and I do it with, even friends I always watch. You go watch it, just watch this movie, you know? Look, there's, you know, there's Franklin Pangborn, there's Alan Hale. It's like you could tell kids, you could go like, hey, listen, you know guys know Gilligan's Island? Well, this is the captain's father, Alan Hale. He goes, get out of here! They're like, get out of here!
So let's see. So there was Bird of the Orchid and then City for Conquest. So that means maybe Whispering Smith was on, or
I forgot what was on the.
You
know, that's the other thing. They come up with these movies that never came on television. I mean, of all the movies, there are still movies we've never seen. Oh, yeah. So when they do these things, they could even come up with some of them are like stars. And there are these, like, wow, that, these guys. And when we knew these guys were, I mean, we realized these guys were making and gals were making a living, but we had no idea they were working this much. Every day they were getting up at like 8 o'clock, going to the studio. Today you're going to do this and this, and then you're going to do this.
Gene Lockhart said he was in 3-4 movies a day. He'd be in 3 movies. And then the next day he'd be in 3 other movies. Just, you know, quick scenes. Wait, 2 or 3 lines, go to the next one.
And then they'd trade performers from one studio to the next.
All the time, sure.
These, to see how different the world was is amazing, at that time. But I'm telling you, I think that to be of our age, I'm going to group us together, even though I'm older. Your brother's my age. How's your brother doing?
Yeah. Hey, he's, you know, living a life.
Okay, living a life.
Every day Saturday.
Well, okay, then, you know, he's got plenty of time, but I mean, I'm looking at movies, I'm going, I never heard of this. and you gotta, like you were saying about a $1 million movie, you gotta say to yourself, why are they showing one movie 27 times? There's 35 other movies in the vault. Still can't come out. I introduced a comic friend of mine to Olson and Johnson, had no idea. All right, and this stuff was kept in the vault forever. Now it's a lot of it's on YouTube.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
Woolsey too. A lot of that stuff is on YouTube.
Yes. Yes. And so I tell these kids, I say, look, especially these, you know, kids who are in comedy, I mean, look, you got to go back further than Adam Sandler. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
and it's all there for you. That, like, it's, we didn't know when we had to wait when they showed one movie 27 times in a week, and we knew there were other movies that these people made or whatever. We'd have to wait because there was nowhere to go see them. You guys, this is all right at your feet. The entire history of mankind, and it's amazing. You've got to see it, so that they understand. The roots of all this stuff, because it all goes.
It's just very important, and it's important because especially in the comedians today, it's all about the delivery. I mean, you can have a great joke, and those back then, those were stage comics, radio comics. Yes. They had delivery.
Yeah,
the delivery was there. My growing up, I mean, my biggest influence was Bud Abbott. I emulated Bud Abbott all the time. I still do.
Right. Yeah, it's obvious to me. you're a good straight man, but you and I have always talked about, you know, the importance of straight men, and just today there aren't even many teams.
No. There's
and when there are teams, and there are some good teams, they are they're not classical teams like that. Like
no,
straight man sing a handsome guy and a dumb guy, you know.
Yeah, and interesting, the straight man always got paid more.
You know, you want to read a great book. I don't remember the author, but it's out there. It's called Hope. It's a beautiful book, and it just shows this guy really went into the Bob Hope, and by learning about Bob Hope, you learn so much about not just vaudeville and stuff, but you learn how the modern stand-up comedian changed because of Bob Hope. That this, he really altered the entire game. And I keep telling, although they're stubborn, a lot of kids, they don't want to look into it. And I, you know, I keep telling them, and I keep promoting this book. It's a wonderful book. Even if you don't know anything about
it. I'm putting it down now, actually.
Write it down. I forgot his name. I could email you with the name or what have you. It was a big hit of maybe 2 years ago. And I couldn't put this book down. Every night I'd read a little bit because I didn't want to finish it.
Right.
And then you learn about Bob Hope, not just as a person, which is fascinating in itself, how he changed a comedy entirely. So people who grow up we were fortunate. Well, we didn't even know. I mean, it was already developed by the time, you know.
Right, yeah.
And Bob Hope was not one of the favorites of our generation.
No. Hey, and how about those?
But he was, as a young man, and what he did, there's a guy who like never had, he crafted the template for the stand-up comedian. This is a guy who never worked another day doing anything else in his life. You're just acting and come at comedy and that's it. A lot of people can't say that.
You even bought old comic books.
Yes, the industry of Bob Hope and who is Bob Hope is well documented in it. It's a wonderful book. But again, that's it. These people who no one, knows, these young kids who are drawn into comedy by, people like, you know, Adam Sandler, and he's like the latest, that whole generation of of comics out there. And a lot of these people don't even know Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, he's the original. I mean, hey, Lenny Bruce, the original. I mean, everybody makes this big deal about, you know, the shock jocks. Wolfman Jack was the first shock jock.
He was the
anybody. I mean, radio is what it is, but you got to study Wolfman Jack, technique, delivery, and he cornered the market. You couldn't surpass that guy.
Yes, a lot of people pass that by, and only because. Howard Stern started to get away with things, and that changed stuff because he started to get away with things, and he started to get away with things based on what everything grows from commercially, and that's money. So, and money and listeners and stuff like that. We were thrown off stations, for doing things. It was just outrageous, considered outrageous. I mean, literally thrown off stations for stuff that was so, it's nothing compared to what happened. So the roots of everybody's roots, all that stuff, needs to be,
you've got to study that. That's why I tell a lot of young people that I speak to, why history? Well, you know what? In order to go forward, in order to progress, you've got to know your history. And if you want to be good at anything, know the history of it. You'll be good at it.
Absolutely. It's important too, because, you know, people come up with things that they think are so original, and they're really very stale. It's like, it's difficult. And that's another thing, people trying to innovate in terms of comedy or drama or anything. Trying to innovate means that you have to go places that, you know, the other people didn't go or whatever.
Yeah, when I had a real job, I used to be involved in a lot of these meetings, and that's another show in itself. But I used to drop a lot of lines and
references, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and for instance, you know, somebody would—they'd be talking about in a meeting, talking about maybe a doctor's office, and I'd say, "Hey, you know, Dr. Levine, you know, you go to see him with liver trouble, you know. At least you're going to die of liver trouble."
Right. And they're like, huh?
So you're like, what? What is that? And I'll just, never mind.
No, doctor, it hurts when I go like this. Don't go like that.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Or I'll say, oh, you know what? Dr. Walter, I ran into him the other day. I was talking to him, and he gave his patient 6 months to live. He says, when he found out he couldn't pay his bill, he gave him another 6 months. And then the youngsters would say, really? What happened?
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Take my wife, please. I know. I had lunch with Henny Youngman once, and I was shocked that he was. I wondered. I said, "Is he always like this?" I mean, he's always like that. He just talked in one-liners. This guy was so embedded. He became this guy he created, and that was it. He's sitting thinking, soup. There's a fly in my soup. And then they brought it soup. You know, there was a bunch of us at the table. Wait, there's a fly in my soup. That's okay. It doesn't cost any extra. You know, like everything just comes.
Big guys eat as much as you do.
And it just, sometimes things are funny because they're funny or old or stupid, what have you. But it is amazing how people go, yeah, and, you know, it's like, yeah, and. So you gotta, but a lot of the old classier stuff still lives in lots of ways, and it still works. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and we're chronicling, stuff of pop culture again here with, Mr. Pop Culture, himself, Mr. Brock LaRob, whose pen name is Tommy Nocerino. Go over to Amazon and buy his books. Don't expect to read about Joe Bolton, but his spin on history and things that could happen, would happen. And that's important. I think the great thing about good literature, whether it's funny or not, and I've always found this because I kept doing it, is put yourself, put the story in and surround it with actual things and things that are real, were real, if you're going to do a period piece or whatever, you know? And that makes, whether you're doing comedy or drama, as you know, because you did it, it makes it extremely... Plus you can't make a mistake. Like when you did the lamplight thing, you can't make a mistake. And I know you didn't. If you did, then I want to know what you're taking while you're writing. You know, it's like suddenly you're writing and he goes, he looked at his wristwatch. He looked at his Timex and he said, it's like, no, wait. In writing, you could stop. You know, it's like, wait a second. Take that Timex off in the movies. You know? So, you know what you're doing, And you have to stop yourself. You have to put the writer has to put himself in that particular situation. But you have to be real. But today,
and that's the fun of it.
Yeah, you're right about being fun. I eventually know I will have Cadillacs still. But I'm not gonna
settle for a good quarter horse.
Yeah, I know, and I'm not gonna turn down. Believe me, I'm not going to turn down the Cadillacs when they're finally there. So they're going to, why am I right? Because I have to write. I always write. It's what I did. And yes, I do it. And it's wonderful to have an audience as you do now. You know what I mean? But, and make pennies here and there. But I don't, I'm not going to turn down a Cadillac. You know, I find that, and this is, let me ask you this question. Cause I've not had any great, ambition or, I don't want to say luck, but I'm uncomfort, comfort. I'm more comfortable writing prose than screenplays and plays and stuff. Even though a lot of my stuff is heavy dialogue and monologue. You've got the whole form in your head, act one, act two, act three. How come you never sat back or did you ever sit back and write a screenplay or think about adapting one of your books to a screenplay? There's two questions. One, have you ever sat down to write a screenplay?
I have never sat down to write a screenplay. And part two of that is I've considered greatly writing a screenplay for Lindley. Maybe I think backwards. I wanted to send it to somebody first to read it before I write it, but maybe I should just write it and then worry about it. Making sense there.
Well, no, when you have a book, though, I think you would be able to sell the making of a screenplay by selling the right, you know what I mean? I would think that, but I mean, if you just write an original screenplay, you haven't thought of that? I mean... That would seem to you, that seemed to be easy for you. I'm not comfortable. I found out by doing it and just not being comfortable. And I've done one or two and with partners or what have you, and some stuff that's gone, but I'm not comfortable with that particular form. It would seem to me you would be.
Yeah, I like to write dialogue.
Well, that's, you know, that's what I mean.
But like I said, I'm thinking backwards and I should be thinking forwards.
In what way?
Well, like I said, if I knew or had somebody that said, yeah, you've, write a screenplay and we'll take a look at it, you know, it's, maybe that's the incentive, I don't know, or just to write a screenplay and I have it, and then what do? Do I shop it? Where do I shop it? You know, I'm my best agent, that's why I'm not doing something.
Yeah, that is a problem, the shopping, especially if you're not in Hollywood. It's very...
Because if you got a name, even if it's garbage, somebody's going to look at it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
There's a lot of garbage out there.
And the pregnant pause with garbage, because I guess we're old. And the other thing, of course, is today everybody is inundated with everything. Movies, the scope of movies that have to compete with the incredible graphics of home entertainment. It's just sickening how great.
This is unbelievable.
You know, when I saw the Spielberg Tommy Cruise in War of the Worlds, when I saw War of the Worlds on a big screen, I took my son. We used to go see here and there, go to the movies, like a good dad. Anyway, when I saw not even the creatures, you know, the robot, the things, the huge tripod things. No, when I saw the town falling apart. When I saw the bridge falling apart in the beginning, the CGI, when I saw that happening and realizing this is all CGI, I went like, there's nothing else you can do. I mean, when you get that realistic, you're there, right?
Yes.
From there, you've got to go to surrealistic, and then you're going to go backwards. You're going to go back to what? To add claymation? You know? Yes. I mean, there's only a few people out there, and it's a special art, who are doing things like claymation, because now you have this CGI. But when you see that, and then you watch, you know, if you watch that, and then later on that night watch the creature from the haunted sea or something, you know, see the guys in suits, or you see the miniature toys, or you watch Ed Wood movies, it's just amazing. It's like you can't go any further, can you?
No, you can't.
It's outrageous how far it has come. And I think that we're just completely inundated, and kids are inundated with everything, because there's 1,000 channels, there's movies, all the movies are there. You can get the movies on your computer, you get the movies on your movie everywhere.
You know, it's great that you bring that up, because I'll many times pull out, I have a collection of Ray Harryhausen films, and I'll put a Ray Harryhausen in, and I'll say, wow, isn't this great?
And yet now you could see that it wasn't seamless.
Now, exactly.
You could look at it and go, oh, wow, it's just a little bit out of focus in the back there, the real thing with the guy, with the monster. And it is, I know what you're saying, it's fascinating. To see that stuff. And yet, I remember the first time I showed my kids the original King Kong. And again, it was like they were watching the funniest movie ever. To know that was as far as the technology had gone, and that was considered the best.
That was a landmark.
Right.
No one has seen it before.
I know. It's difficult.
With music, too.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, what was it? City Conquest? Conquest City? What is it? City for
Conquest.
City for Conquest. That music, which played a great part in that movie and the characters.
Yes, with a young Kennedy.
That was Max Steiner did all that movie.
Steiner, yes. He was the father of movie music.
He's the King Kong guy, too, right? So,
King Kong was the first film to have an actual film score.
Yes, yes. Well, look, Brock, again, stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Frank. You know what? I just mean this sincerely. It's always a pleasure, and to speak to you, talk to our fans out there, and the great people out there. And, you know, let's keep laughing. Let's, you know, let's enjoy life. Let's have a good time.
We're gonna take it right yet. We're gonna take it to the hilt and just keep going. We'll stay in touch. We'll know what's going on, and I'll remind everybody to go get your books and stuff even when you're not here.
Thanks so much. We'll be in touch, and I'd love to be on soon again, and we'll do it again.
Yeah, maybe we can get another one of those three-way things or four-way.
Oh, yeah. Thing.
Get some other people on here to scream and yell about stuff and what have you. Okay, stay.
Thanks so much.
Stay well and keep up the work, whether it's good or bad, I don't care. Say something. Atupid. What do you say? Say something like, say what Captain Jack would say at the end. What would he say, Captain?
Captain Jack would say.
Captain Jack McCarthy. What would he say?
Captain Jack McCarthy would say, Atupid and smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing. Yeah, there it goes. Okay, kiddo.
All right.
Be well. See you, see you on the interweb.
See you in the
movie. Okay. Ciao.
Bye.
Yes, his pen name is, you heard me first. You heard it right. Mr. What's going on here? Oh, Frankie told the man his name during the title of the show. We're getting ready to wrap this sucker up. Start to talk and time just flies by. That's what I love about this. Well, that's why I tell people, don't worry, you're coming, oh, you talk for 2 hours. That's the way they talk. No, they don't talk like that anyway. Oh, but I'm gonna, oh, got it. I sit in these positions. I gotta get the boom again. Maybe, cause I'm leaning over for this. Let me put my thing down. But anyway, we're almost out of here. And so I want to remind you to be back again next time. Go get your books, go get the things, do what you gotta do. And we'll try and be here again next week, I think we'll be a Thursday, even though we're leaving town here. I think we'll make it. We'll see what happens. Either event, in any event, in all events, and certainly this event. My name is Frankie Tall, man's name is the title of the show, Cthulhu Chronicles. You're listening to the Godfather of Internet Radio. They call me that because, well, we've been here a long time. Longer than I care to count. What else? Facebook. You know me. Find me there. fcatolo@yahoo.com if you want to email me, and a lot of you do. And I thank you for that. It's a wonderful thing to be emailed and for you to say things like, hey, you're okay. But it's the way that goes, you know. You betcha. I don't think there's anything else I even had to remind you about. Thank you, Mr. Brock LaRob. Go to Amazon or what have you. Buy my books, buy his books too. But look for the name Tommy Nocerino, Nocerino. That is his pen name. Lamplight and Treadway. No, I forgot the second one. You'll find it. You'll find it. And go get my books. Remember, I'm warning you. I'm warning you. They might not be so cheap. Cheap, inexpensive. There's a difference. Use the word inexpensive, not the word cheap. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. I remind you. I'm not going to remind you anything. Live now. Only now. And now it's time to go. So, as usual, 2 hours. We said a lot. I'm going to leave you now. Because I have nothing more to say.